All right, and we are back after a much shorter delay between episodes. Not 18 months, couple of days. That's a much better pace, I think. But we're going to continue today talking about when memories change. That's the little kind of three-part series that I'm doing right now. Again, this is kind of really pulling from some writing I've done recently on my Substack. You can check that out in the description below. And if you haven't listened to the last episode, make sure you do that first, because these do build one on off of another. So the last episode, I talked about my first experience with God. I would say my first real profound spiritual experience, and how the memory of that has changed quite drastically in my mind, and how I'm trying to reconcile that. And today I want to kind of flip the coin a little bit, and I want to tell you another story, and how in the moment when this story happened, I didn't think anything of it, and now how that memory has also changed, but in a much different way. So on my Substack, the name of this piece is "Face to Face with God in a Parking Lot," and so this happens in 2013. So this is 10 years ago. I was 25, and I suppose I'd probably just turned 26, and I had taken my first ministry position. I was just became a pastor at the church that I grew up in, and I was the college pastor, so I was director of student ministries there, and we also had a little house of prayer. I was the director of that as well, so I had kind of two primary roles, and so I was working with college students, and we had a kind of a young adults ministry at the time, and we'd wanted to change that into kind of a full-fledged campus ministry where we were plugged into the life of the campus. We were on campus. We were, kind of full go, you know, in the rhythm, in the life of the university, Minnesota State, which is my alma mater, which is also my hometown. And so I had kind of eased into the ministry position at the very end of 2012. And then January 1, 2013, I officially came on full-time staff. And my first few months, actually, in ministry, I spent almost no time in my office doing kind of pastoral things. We were in the middle of a fairly large remodel in our, like, youth room. And so I spent the first, like, 3 months, I kid you not, of ministry, almost every day wearing paint clothes, and demoing this youth room, painting, drywalling, building stuff, ripping up carpet, like basically a construction crew, because we were trying to get this project done. And so by the time spring rolls around, I'm finally settling in a little bit. And I walk outside my office one afternoon, and if I remember correctly, I'm walking out of the church, going into the parking lot, going to my car. If I remember right, going to meet a student up on campus, and I'm just kind of getting into the normal rhythms of things. But I walk across the parking lot and I see my grandpa out there, God rest his soul, and he's doing something that I've only known my grandpa to do, and that was sweep the parking lot. Now, you have to know a little bit about my grandparents for the story to, I think, kind of for you to get the weight of this story. So my grandparents were missionaries in the interior of Papua New Guinea in the 1950s and 60s. So they moved to the Eastern Highlands region of Papua New Guinea in 1955. Had one kid pregnant with their second. While they were on the field, they had two more, including my mom. My mom is the baby of the family, the four kids. She's the youngest. And so she grew up her first, I think, 5 years, something like that, on the mission field. And they lived literally on the side of a mountain There's this Mount Michael in the Eastern Highlands province of New Guinea. There's kind of this big open field plateau halfway up the mountain, and that is to this day even the mission a mission station that my grandparents had started. And now when they moved there in the mid 50s, they it took them quite a while to get over there, and there's almost no communication back to the States. In fact, my grandfather, he had a younger brother die while he was overseas and didn't know about it for almost a year. I think it was 10 months. And when they went over there, this was 1955, so right after World War II ending, and there was actually quite a bit of fighting on the islands there in the South Pacific because it was mainly just jungle. And then after the war ended, there was a pretty large missionary push into that part of the world. And so these were, at that time, very animistic tribal people, indigenous people groups. Every 10 miles, you have a different kind of indigenous group with a different language. Many of them were cannibals at the time. Just crazy practices. They still, their dress and kind of appearance and look and all that kind of stuff was still, the same as it had been for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Now, because of the influx of missionaries and kind of people from the West post World War II, that's drastically changed now. But in 1955, when my grandparents went there, it was a completely different world. I mean, it was stepping back into a time machine, into the middle of a jungle. And I mean, the stories that they could tell, I don't want to turn this into a story time of my grandparents, but we're talking about fording rivers and sleeping out in the jungle. And again, you're trying to reach cannibalistic tribes and just the absolute crazy things that they went through, that they did, that they saw, that they experienced, both good and bad, and just, I mean, just a different breed, just different crazy stuff there. And so they were there for 12 years, 1955, 1967. 1967, they come back to the States and they move to South Central Minnesota and plant a charismatic church. And shortly thereafter, in the early 70s, you have the Jesus People movement, and they have kind of this explosion of young people, college age, 20 somethings who are getting saved in the droves, and the church is off and running at that point. And that's the church I grew up in. That's the church that I ended up pastoring at for almost 6 years. I was on staff there pastoring before my family and I we moved away. But my grandfather was he was the kind of guy that you couldn't slow him down. Only, death was going to slow him down. And so, when I'm 2013, I'm 25, he's in his mid 70s at that point, and he's still at the church every day, putzing around, painting a wall that nobody really asked to be painted, refinishing grout or cleaning, the bathrooms or scrubbing floors somewhere or fixing a leaking faucet, or as in this day, sweeping, loose gravel and items that have blown into the parking lot, sweeping them up so that later that night when we have service, nobody tracks anything into the church. All the jobs he did for years and years and years. He retired officially from ministry in 2000. And so, this is at this point 12, 13 years where he's has not actually been on staff, and he still shows up every day to the church when there's service or not. He's just working. And he's sometimes, for a lot of those years, he was there for 6, 7, 8 hours. Like, he was just there all day. And as he got older, that eventually slowed until the last year of his life, he really slowed down. And but at this point, he's still, like, 2013, this is, he's still going full bore. He's still there all day, like he's, you know, like he's on staff, like he's really honestly like our, he was kind of our grounds operations team, one man operations team, keeping everything afloat. But anyway, I'm walking outside. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit trail of stories of my grandpa or my grandparents. They were kind of the heroes of my life, and so I could keep going forever. But I walk outside the parking lot, and again, I'm 3, 4 months into ministry, and I see him sweeping the parking lot. He's in his typical, paint stained khaki pants that are probably 15, 20 years old, a white t-shirt, a straw hat, sun hat to keep the sun out of his face. And I remember this being a kind of a gorgeous spring day. And then he would always just wear dress shoes, that he th these gray dress shoes, like that he had had for probably 20 or 30 years. And instead of, you know, obviously throwing them away, but or instead of polishing them, he would just spray paint them gray to keep them looking new. So every few months, he would literally just take them out back, throw a fresh coat of gray spray paint on them. And so he always had these gray dress shoes. And so he was out there sweeping and working. And so I approach him. And again, he's not only my grandfather, he's really kind of at this point the kind of the patriarch of the family, of the church. And, you know, he'd given his life for the church. And so I go out and I approach him and I say, "Hey, I just started ministry, you know, a couple of months ago. I'm getting my feet underneath me." And I just flat ask him, "Do you have any advice for me?" Now you have to also know this about him. He did not talk about the victories or defeats of the past much. To him, it was all like not that big of a deal. And I remember another time we were out to lunch after church one day, and it was my wife and I, my grandparents, and then my grandpa, his brother, who lived up in the Minneapolis area. Him and his wife had driven down, and so it was me and my wife, my grandparents, and his brother and sister-in-law, who were in their 60s or 70s at that point as well. We're all out to lunch, and my grandpa starts telling this story about when they were in New Guinea on the mission field, and his younger brother Cliff is just laughing. I go, "What's so funny?" He goes, "Yeah, I've known him obviously my whole life. He's my brother. I've never heard this story before." And my grandpa just didn't, to him, it was all normal. All the good, the bad, the ugly. It was all, you know, the victories were nothing to brag about and the defeats were nothing to complain about. And so if you didn't ask him flat out, he wasn't gonna divulge very much. And so I go up and ask him, "Hey, what advice do you have for me?" You know? And he paused for just a brief second without skipping a beat, really as if he kind of knew the question was coming. I don't know if he ever did. I never asked him. But I'll never forget it, just the subtle details here. And the subtle details are what eventually matter. He kind of shakes his head, chuckles just ever so slightly, and he says to me, "Just remember, people are funny." And with that, and just a quick smirk, he lowers his head back down towards the parking lot, towards the pavement, and he just keeps sweeping and he walks away. And that was it. Just remember, people are funny. That was his advice to his 25-year-old grandson, who is third generation pastor at that point. His son, my uncle, was the had taken over as the lead pastor of the church. So third generation coming up seeking advice, and his advice is just remember, people are funny. Now, as years have gone by, you know, I'm 35 now, so that was 10 years ago. As years have gone by, those words have definitely been proven to be true. People are funny. But it isn't really what he said that sticks with me now. It was the way he said it. It was like I had just mentioned all those small details. It was the smile, the chuckle, the look in his eye, the way that it was lighthearted, It was the manner in which he said all these things and where he said them, that he was sweeping a church parking lot. And, you know, as my grandfather, I know behind that smirk and that smile and that little chuckle and the what seems to be kind of this joke, I know there are countless stories, and I know many of those stories. I know the stories of betrayal that he went through, where his some of his best friends and ministry partners, you know, that he had been running with for years, betrayed him. I know those stories. I know the scars of misunderstanding when, you know, we were the only charismatic kind of Pentecostal church in our town of, you know, 50, 60,000 people. And so we were always kind of the weird, crazy group because we were the only people that way. And he bore the brunt of that for a long time. And, you know, even all the way back, I know some stories back into the 70s in the Jesus People movement. It was their church who embraced a lot of the young people and the music and things like that and took a ton of heat for it. He went through two church splits in his time. Very ugly. Very nasty. One of which our family was accused of embezzling money. And at one point he's, you know, facing the prospect of our name being written about in newspapers and making the evening news. So there's all these stories that I know that are behind that little line, just remember, people are funny. You know, I know the stories of the insults, the mocking, the scorning, being taken advantage of. Heck, he, in the early 2000s, late 90s, I think it was, maybe early 2000s, I think late 90s, a congregant in our church, you know, swindled him out of his entire life savings as part of a Ponzi scheme. He lost it, that my grandparents lost everything, all everything they'd ever saved. So, I mean, he'd been cheated, stolen from, betrayed, mocked, insulted, you know, gone through two church splits where both times more than half the church left and both times every other staff pastor left, half the staff left or more. So he'd been through the ringer. And when he says to me, just remember, people are funny, I know all those stories. You know, as Paul says, you know, we carry about the death of Jesus in our body. The marks of Christ, I think he says in Galatians, we carry in our bodies. And here's my grandfather on that, you know, April or May day, sweeping a parking lot in his 70s, you know, old, at this point, sun-wrinkled guy, walks, talks like the old man that he is at that point. And he carries all of those stories, the good and the bad, the victories and the defeats, really in one single word, in the word funny. In the word funny. Now, my grandfather, he wasn't bitter, hardened, resentful, vengeful, angry, calloused. He was none of those things. What came into his heart when he thought about all of that, when his grandson approached him and asked him for some advice, and what came to his mind when he thought about all those stories, something funny, something to smile about, something to laugh at, because people are funny. And that in itself is funny. And that small comedic moment, that moment has also been a memory that has been transfigured in me. It's changed in me. Because that moment, that conversation, and again, that was the end of the conversation. Just remember, people are funny. And then he walked away. That moment was an encounter with God. I was, as the scriptures say, entertaining angels and didn't even realize it. Those words and how they were said, that was God to me. That was a word of God to me. That was an encounter with God to me. Now, in the moment, I did not realize it. In the moment, I was actually, if I'm very frank, quite disappointed. Like, that's it? Because, listen, I never asked him for more advice after that. You know, I just knew he was not, you know, he wasn't a big, like, let me, you know, his philosophy was really more like, let you figure it out. And he'll be there to support you, but he was going to let you figure it out. He wasn't going to really intervene too much. Now, whether that was right or wrong, I guess, that you know, I don't know. But that's how he did it. And so I kind of took my one swing, and that's what I got. Just remember, people are funny. And so at the moment, I was confused and I was disappointed that that's all that I got. And now I realize that that ability to say, to carry all of that pain, to carry all of those stories, to carry all those victories and defeats with that lightheartedness, with that tact, with that precision, with that guilelessness, with that lightheartedness, A, that to me is a sign of the work of the Spirit, but B, that is also a sign that the presence of God is in your midst. That there is both a prophetic cut, there is mystery, there is laughter, there is a smirk, but there is also dead seriousness all wrapped up in this thing. That's how the Spirit moves and operates. That's what the voice of the Spirit sounds like. And that's what the face of God looks like. It looks like an old man with a broom in his hand and a smile on his face and a chuckle in his voice, laughing to himself at the absurdity of God's preserving grace and the frailty of humanity all at the same moment. Because again, he's saying that and making that comment in the parking lot of the church where all those things happened, in the very building, on the very property, under the same sign, under the same roof. And all those other people and stories, they have come and gone. And here is this old man still carrying laughter in his heart in that same place. And as the years have gone on, that has become an encounter with God for me, a quite profound one, actually. A quite profound one. Because again, I have realized that God is always up to more than what we think that he is. And that I can only pray that God would give me the grace to carry that same attitude, that same lightheartedness, that same absurd grace towards other people. That people aren't cruel, people aren't mean, people are funny. And I think that's right. So we're going to do one more of these on When Memories Change. So stay tuned for the next episode. Appreciate you guys stopping by, and we'll see you again next time.